Com.
Welcome back to Shattering This. I'm your host, Yetta. We had a caller today that recommended a book. I'm going to recommend one. In fact, we're going to read from the book that I'm going to recommend. It is the Torah. There is no other book that I'm aware of worth recommending other than the Torah. But if you wish to disagree with that, if you wish to challenge Yahweh's position regarding his Torah and the merits of reading it, then you can call 877-300-7645 and give God a piece of your mind. As for me, I'm going to recite what he inspired. Beginning where we left off in the program yesterday, actually day before yesterday, with a book named Devarim. Devarim is the fifth book of what is formally called the Torah, capital T. Torah, lowercase t, simply means teaching. But of the formal title, Torah, Devarim, means words. And in the fourth chapter we read, "For indeed, whatever person, regardless of their race or place, has significant value relationally, his goal is to approach and to be near God. He strives to be in accord with Yahweh, our God, calling and inviting all of us to God." So, pretty straightforward here. So it doesn't matter. Your race does not matter. Your place of birth does not matter. Your gender does not. Nothing matters here other than what your attitude, what you choose to do with your life, how you choose to engage with God. So it doesn't matter what race or place you're from. That would be from Goy. If you want to have significant value from God's perspective, then your goal ought to be as mine is, to approach and be near God. Now, how do you do that? How do you approach God? Well, when you read his Torah, you find that God provided a path from our world to his. The purpose of that path was to enable the covenant. The covenant starts by telling us to walk away from our country, from our earthly family, so that we can trust and rely upon Yahweh as opposed to our country, because our country is unreliable. And he is reliable, and we come to trust and rely on him by observing, reading, therefore, reciting his Torah teaching. Now, this path to God that he has delineated in his Torah guidance begins with a doorway named Passover, which we are invited to enter, crossing a threshold called unleavened bread, where our soul becomes cleansed so that we can receive the benefit of Bikurim, which is to be adopted into God's family, which leads to Shavuah, to the promise of seven, where we are enriched with Yahweh's Torah teaching, and we are empowered by his Spirit, so that on the fifth step along this way to approach and be near God, we can invite others. We can warn them that if they are dependent upon their government, they're going to be left, that they aren't on the path, that if they're reliant on their religion, that they are on the wrong path, and that there is a singular, narrow, restrictive, and individual path that we can walk to God that he himself has provided. This leads to the Day of Reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, where we are invited to do this very thing, to karob, to approach and be near God. This leads to the final destination, to the seventh step, where we get to camp out with God, called Sukkah. Speaking of this individual who has significant value, this now is the explanation for Yahusha's Sermon on the Mount, where he said that those who teach the value and merit of every aspect of Yah's Torah teaching will be considered of great value, and those who instruct others to disregard aspects of the Torah will be held of little account. This is the basis of that statement. God says he strives to be, this is the person held of, considered to have great worth, to be significantly valuable, the person who is held in high esteem, he strives to be in accord with Yahweh, our God. How do you make certain that your view is in accord with Yahweh's view? Well, why don't you read Yahweh's view, his perspective, his teaching? If your teaching is consistent with his, then you are in accord with him. The only way to do that is to read his teaching, which is what we're doing. We're reading from the Torah. The only way for someone to be in accord with Yahweh's guidance, his instructions, is to recite his guidance, his instructions, which means you need to recite his Torah teaching. And then it goes on to say that person who is held in high esteem, he calls and invites every one of us to God. Kara. Kara is the basis of Mikra. The seven invitations to be called out of our world and to meet with God is based upon this verb, Kara. And so he's saying that, the person who is held in high esteem, who is valued by God, just as a father would value a child, is someone who not only reads from Yah's Torah so that he is in accord with Yahweh, but he invites them, all of us, all who will listen to God, of which there is only one path, the Mikra. This is pretty clear. It's irrefutable. It's Yah's testimony. And whatever individual, regardless of their race or geography, again, Goy, a person from different cultures or places, who has merit, gadol, who has significant value and worth, who is held in high esteem in the relationship, for him, the clearly communicated prescriptions, the choke, that which is engraved and inscribed in writing that cuts us into the covenant relationship, and the means used to achieve justice and resolve disputes, the mishpat, the basis upon which good judgment is exercised and sound decisions are made, are right, proper, and vindicating, just as is the case with the whole of the Torah. So, I may have made an assumption in the initial statement here in Devarim 4:7 that the way to approach Yahweh was delineated in his Torah, that the way to be in accord with Yahweh is to read from his Torah so that your instructions are in accord with his instructions, and that by calling and inviting all of us to God, this individual who is held in high esteem is inviting people to embrace and observe Yah's seven called out meetings. But that presumption quickly ends in an assurance with the follow-on statement, where God says that this person who has merit and who is held in high esteem not only values the whole of the Torah, but that the specific aspects of the Torah, the choke, that which is inscribed in writing and cuts us into this relationship, is prioritized as part of the Torah, as are the mishpat, which are the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, as they are delineated in the Torah. So God is even telling us what to focus on. The invitations, the inscribed prescriptions for living, and the means that he has provided to resolve our disputes. That is what we should focus on, because they are proper, they're right, they are vindicating, they're upright, they're forthright, they're righteous, they're perfect, just as the case with the whole of the Torah. We have our good friend Larry on the line. Hello, Larry, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you this morning, Yada?
You know, anytime you have a chance to read from the Torah and to consider it, it's a pretty good day.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty happy with this. Then whatever individual, regardless of their race or place of their birth, who has merit in the relationship, for him, the clearly communicated prescriptions and the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, for him, they are right, they are proper, and they are vindicating. Just as the case with the whole of the Torah. This is that which I am bestowing and placing before you all on this day. Any argument with that, Larry?
No, no. It turns out that Yah isn't a racist. Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, it's was this just to one race of people, or did he specifically use Goy, which means people from different races and places?
No, I think it was pretty specific to everybody, you know.
Yeah, in both statements specifically yeah. used Goy. And what did he encourage us Goy to do? Because, of course, Paul said that he was...
Torah.
Yeah, but and so why was Paul claiming to be...
the Torah, you know?
Yeah. Here's Paul. He claims to be God's lone-appointed apostle to the Gentiles. And he has the opposite message. Ignore the Torah. Ignore circumcision. Ignore the invitations. They mean nothing to you. The Torah is the opposite of righteous. There is no righteousness in the Torah. There is no salvation or vindication in the Torah. So you got Paul saying exactly the opposite to exactly the same group of people that Yahweh was saying, well, you want to be vindicated? Read the Torah. You want to be considered valuable in my eyes? Read the Torah. If you want to exercise sound judgment, read the Torah. If you want prescriptions for living, read the Torah.
Or read Paul.
Or you can choose to say, well, that God, you know, he was a mean son of a gun, and didn't like that God very much. So let's go ahead and kill him. We'll create an Old Testament, which is the will and testament of a now deceased God, because we're going to make a new God with an entirely new name. We're going to call him Jesus Christ, and we're going to have our new and improved God have an entirely new testament that bears no resemblance to the old one of the now deceased deity of the Old Testament.
Yeah, Jossie pointed that out to me. She said they get rid of that mean God and replace him with the nice one.
Yeah,
you know,
let me put this in a different perspective, Larry. If your dad told you that that the path to eternal life was consuming poison that was sugar coated, and that all you needed to do to be to grow and to be successful was to believe that that injuring yourself was a practical course of action. Would that God be merciful, or would that father be mean?
He would be twisted and insane.
There you go. And a God who says, if you follow this path, you will live forever. You will become my child. You will inherit everything that I have to give. Is that God merciful, or is he demented? Of Christianity, where Christians created a new God that they present as being merciful, as opposed to the old God that they don't like very much, that they think is mean-spirited. And so let's put it in the context of a father, Larry, a father who says, I have taken the time to write down some guidance for you on how you can capitalize on the gift of life that I have given you, such that if you follow this guidance, you will become immortal. You will become enormously more powerful. You're going to become perfect. In fact, if you follow these instructions, I've already done everything necessary for you to become immortal, for you to become perfect, and for you to be empowered in every conceivable way so that we can spend our eternity together. But if you choose to ignore these instructions, this guidance that I have written for you, just understand that the consequence is that you're going to die, that ultimately this life that I gave you will end. And that God is somehow mean.
Well, that wouldn't make sense, would it?
No. And a God that tells you all you need to do is believe what men tell you, And even if we come up with a bogus name for God, Jesus Christ or Allah, and even though we come up with instructions that are wholly contrary to the Creator God of the universe, and even though we claim that we've been authorized by Him and yet are contradicting Him, that those people are being nice, that that's compassionate,
well, it's pretty,
leading people astray in that way?
It's pretty clear that's part of the church teaching is to go out and candy coat everything and smile, you know, while you lie to somebody and make sure that their soul is eternally separated from Yah. You know, I mean, you and I both know the word church never appears in any parchment writing. The word's ecclesia, and it means called out assemblies, which is equal to Moed Mikra in Hebrew, which is the called out appointments, which start in spring every year at Pesach or Passover and end in the fall at Sukkah. So the word ecclesia served to codify the witness writings with the scriptures, and it was never had anything to do with any type of religious organization that worshiped the Lord on Sundays. So
no, ecclesia is a direct derivative, comes directly out of, is inseparable from the mikra. And the mikra are based upon what we've just, the verb we've just considered here, kara, which means to call out and to meet, to welcome.
So who
and
changed
so
what?
When yeah, so who changed mikra to ecclesia and ecclesia to church to create a religious myth as opposed to an understanding that the only way to be called out from this world and to meet with God, the invitation to do so, are all presented in the Torah, and they exist with seven invitations. There's never any more than seven. There's only seven, and that those seven are presented in history, and they are presented in the heart of the Torah itself. Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, seven Sabbaths, trumpets, reconciliations, and ultimately shelters, which is to camp out with God.
And I do have a question for you here.
Even hard.
In the religious Jewish calendar, of course, you know, every other week they have a set apart day of some kind for something, which gets very confusing.
Yes.
You know, once we have the seven mikra, we know what they are. If you look at what was called in Paleo Hebrew Bikurim, which today we call first fruits, I guess. If you look at first fruits, that always follows. It just falls 1, 2, 3 days. Always 1, 2, 3 days.
Right. Always.
Yeah, you look at the Jewish religious calendar, and Bikurim could be. I don't know what they base it on. I really don't.
Yeah, because the if you look at the Jewish religious calendar, Passover is incorporated into unleavened bread, and the whole thing is matzah. And so rather than even a reference, Bikurim no longer gets even a reference. It is it's all incorporated into unleavened bread. And they and, you know, unleavened bread without a Pesach and Bikurim is meaningless. If you become perfect because you've actually observed and capitalized upon the removal of sin from your soul, that is the essence of unleavened bread, but aren't immortal, which is the benefit of Pesach, nor adopted into God's family, which is the purpose of Bikurim, what good is being perfected? It has no value whatsoever. And, of course, the Jewish religious calendar completely ignores Shavuah, because they don't understand the empowerment of the Torah. They don't understand how God empowers us when we embrace His covenant. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break and consider more of what Yahweh has to teach us from His Torah. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. If you wish to engage in this discussion, as Larry has done, you can call us at 877-300-7645. Larry will even pay for the call. As we continue to consider Yah's testimony here, Not only is he telling us that that the source of our vindication, the source of our righteousness and perfection is found in the whole of the Torah, he goes on to say, only be observant, which he's saying here exclusively, without exception. You want to know the right answer. You want to know the right path. You want to approach God. You want to live in his presence. You want to be valued by God. To be valued by God is to be one of his covenant children. Said exclusively, without exception, be observant as your goal. Pay very close attention to your soul, lest you forget the words which you have seen with your eyes, and lest they are removed from your heart. All of the days of your life you should make them known to your children and to your children's children. So he's coming out here, he's saying that the thing I want you to focus on, the place where you should turn to exercise good judgment, to be to benefit from vindication, which is salvation, to approach me and to live in my presence, is the Torah. And he says that's the whole of the Torah, and therefore observe it. Without exception, pay attention to it. Do you want a book that will answer your questions? Consider Yah's Torah teaching as your goal. And then he says that in this light, pay especially close attention to your soul. Now, what does Yah say about souls that don't answer his invitation to come into his presence and to meet with him on Passover, on unleavened bread, and on the Day of Reconciliations?
Well, he says those souls will be dissipated. You know, they'll be
they cease to exist.
Inherited.
So if you don't want he says both. You're correct. It's not just one. I shouldn't have interrupted there so quickly. You're right. He says both. He says that any soul that fails to answer the invitations that I have provided, and there's seven of them in the Torah, he says those souls will cease to exist and they will be disinherited. Pretty straightforward. So he's telling you now that as it relates to the Torah, be especially cognizant of your soul. And the fate of one individual soul is specifically addressed as it relates to Yah's seven called out invitations, his mikra. And he says, I want you to pay attention to focus on, to observe, to closely examine and carefully consider his Torah so that you don't forget his words, which you've seen with your eyes, which he's now emphasizing. What does it mean to be observant? It's to see and therefore remember the words that you have seen with your eyes.
And yet most people
aren't observant,
confused and think that it's about doing this and the way you wear your hair and playing religious dress up and all sorts of nonsense that cannot be done today. You know, as an example, you and I can't have a Pesach lamb any longer. I mean, who's going to perform the ceremony? We're not on Mount Moriah.
Right.
But we can understand it.
We
can observe it.
Yeah, we can eat lamb and kind of a way to remember it. Now, you know, this is with your eyes. With your eyes. To observe with your eyes. Now, you can't do anything with your eyes unless you're hooked up to one of those, you know, special new wheelchair contraptions where I think there is a way to look at a lens that analyzes eye movement and that will cause things to happen. But for the 99.999% of us, we do with our hands, we observe with our eyes. And so, since doing is with the feet and with the hands, and observing is with the eyes, according to Yah, he has defined what it means to observe the Torah. Read it. That simple. Then he goes on to say that all of the days of your life, you want to know how to best use the time that we have, make Yah's words known. Make his testimony known as it appears in his Torah. And to whom? To our children and to our children's children. The single most important thing we can do. Goes on to say, and Yahweh instructed and guided Sawa, which is the very meaning of Torah. And Yahweh instructed and guided me, this is Moshe speaking, accordingly, at this time, that she, now speaking of the set apart spirit, our spiritual mother, would teach you regarding the clearly communicated prescriptions. These are the inscribed and engraved recommendations regarding life that cut us into this relationship, and the means to achieve and resolve disputes, the misvot. That's the means that God has used to exonerate us and so that we can exercise sound judgment, so that you act upon, you engage in, you profit from them accordingly in the land which relationally you will all pass over, crossing the Yarden. Now, Yarden means flowing. It's commonly translated Jordan, but it is the source from which we receive Yah's benefits to that place as your inheritance. So, Yahweh instructed and guided Moshe through the Torah accordingly at this time that she, speaking to the set-apart spirit, would teach us Lamad. Again, two, instruction, guidance, and teaching, all helping us understand what Torah means, which is teaching, guidance, direction, and instruction, you regarding the clearly communicated prescriptions, the choke, and the means used to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which are both presented in the Torah, so that you act upon, engage in, profit from them accordingly, in the land which relationally you all will pass over, crossing the Yarden to that place as your inheritance. Now, since the Bereth covenant is a family affair, and since Yahweh presents himself as our father, we should not be surprised that the set-apart spirit represents the maternal aspects of God's nature, combined with the son, and God's she is God's protection. She is the shelter that enables us to live in God's home. She is the covering that makes us look perfect in God's eyes. Now, all of these things are aspects of the family life and therefore are reflected in the concept of covenant. So, Yahweh repeats the warning Moshe had made in the very next verse, saying that we ought to be concerned about our nefeshel, particularly relative to his guidance. God's apprehension is based on the fact that man is prone to creating religious icons and then worshiping them. He is specifically concerned about creating male and female statues, and thus of overtly, in this testimony, he's overtly denouncing crucifixes. He's overtly denouncing the Madonna and Child statue that you find in so many Orthodox Christian and Catholic churches. Even the Christian dove and the ichthus are specifically condemned. So Yahweh says that the consequence of such behavior is shahat, it's corrupting and destructive, and that it will lead many to their grave, to incineration in the pit, and incarceration in the pit. So in this light, we find God indicating, initiating all of this so that we come to understand it, telling us not to be enticed by, not to bow down to the sun, the moon, and the stars. And yet, most every important aspect of Christianity is sun-based. Islam is moon-based. Secular humanism is star-based. In secular humanism, we are children of the stars as they provide all of the elements of the universe as well as the stuff of life. So God is speaking directly to all of us when he advises us not to make replicas of men, women, birds, fish, reptiles, the sun, and the moon. And he says this, lest you promote or accept a different perspective and understanding of the heavens. And you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, and all of the command and control implements of the heavens. And you are seduced and led astray, scattered and vanished. And you bow down in worship, even speak to them, and you serve them, which relationally is seductive, it's deceiving, it's dividing and separating that person from Yahweh, your God, and with them all of their families, everyone under the heavens. God is telling us not to be seduced by religious and political images. You know, you have stars on our flag. You have statues in our capital. We have so much of what we revere that is based on. Yeah.
sun yes. drop halo on her head or crown, whatever you want to call
yeah.
it.
And the rays of the sun emanating from that halo.
Yeah, and people throw this up as though somehow, you know, God bless America, and you got the stars on the flag, and you've got the, you know, Statue of Liberty.
The Athena being the Statue of Liberty, right.
And somehow this is all pleasing right. to you know, the Creator and Savior, and it isn't. In fact, it's the opposite.
And all the crucifixes in Catholic churches and the statues to Mary.
I think that's the worship of death. You know, that's what I think that is. But and
so he says, you know,
as I look at that, and you tell me if I'm wrong, when you read the Hebrew scriptures, they are really the most anti-religious material that I know of that's ever been written.
Yeah. Correct.
And isn't whoring and sinning and all these things, aren't they tied directly to religion and the scripture?
Yeah, being unfaithful, choosing to embellish one's self, aggrandize oneself, enrich oneself, and empower oneself by depriving others of having a relationship with God. You know, he's saying here, I want you to observe the Torah, lest you promote or accept a different perspective. What is a different perspective? Christianity. What's a different perspective? Islam. What's a different perspective? Socialist, secular humanism. So I want you to observe the Torah, lest you promote or accept a different perspective. If you observe the Torah, you won't accept a different perspective and understanding of the heavens. And you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, and all of the command and control implements of the heavens, which, you know, a lot of them are demons. And you are seduced and led astray, scattered and banished. And you bow down and worship in a religious context to them. And you serve them, which relationally is seductive, it's deceiving, it's dividing, separating that person from Yahweh, your God. And with them, all of their families, and everyone under the heavens. And has not religion done this very thing to humankind? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Final segment of Shattering Myths for this week. I want to turn the page because of what's happening in the world today. Just a moment ago, Hamas fired a rocket into Jerusalem. Earlier in the day and yesterday, they fired rockets into Tel Aviv. And Israel, of course, is responding. They're bombing the launch sites from which the rockets are being fired. And they have already killed Hamas's military director that was orchestrating all of this. I want you to know that much of this is to be blamed on what happened in Libya and in Egypt. What happened in Libya, and to a large degree even what happened in Iraq, by America supporting the Mujahideen, the Islamic terrorists, in the takeover of Libya, Qatar and Saudi Arabia and other Muslim countries took and funneled U.S. weapons into Libya, with Egypt now being under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood. What we've had there is a complete disregard for what's happening in the Sinai and the funneling of those same weapons that we saw in Libya now in the Sinai and being shipped and carried into Gaza. And with the United States of invasion of Iraq, we see a substantially empowered Iran, and the very rockets that are being fired from Hamas into Iran, into Jerusalem now and into Tel Aviv, were all manufactured in Iran. And so we have created a world which is universally hostile to Israel. We have Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood leader of Egypt, condemning Israel for its quote-unquote blatant aggression, backing Hamas, which is has provoked this fight. And it is ever escalating. We are in the midst of seeing one of the birth pangs that's going to lead to World War III, and most of the world is on the wrong side. and it is escalating rapidly before our very eyes. We have Josie on the phone. Hello, Josie. How are you? Well, I have Josie, but she may be listening to a delay of the program and is not with us immediately. But I do want everyone to know, here's what our situation is vis-a-vis this escalating violence now in Israel, is that Hamas recognizes that while it continues to send rockets into Israel, that Israel will have to defend itself. And because it has positioned its rocket launchers and its munitions facilities and warehouses under the homes of civilians and under civilian properties, that when Israel responds to thwart this ongoing threat, that Palestinian women and children will be killed, and that the Palestinians who have no interest in the lives of those women and children will then scream out to the world, the Muslim world in particular, for more weapons which to attack Israel, and Israel will be further isolated. It is the very world that we live in today, and we're witnessing what will be the catalyst that's going to drive the Magog War during the initial phase of the tribulation. Hello, Joyce. Are you with us now?
Hi, Yadi. Yes, I am. And you just so eloquently described what's going on. And I've been there during the Red Alert, and I know so many people in the media are either totally ignorant, ill-informed, or they choose to side with Gazans because they don't want to know the truth. And I actually believe people are anti-Semitic and they won't admit it or realize it. But that was not why.
Oh, yeah. Let me just stop you 1 second there. The reason I brought this up is because I was reading a BBC article, and the BBC article says that the missiles were sent into Jerusalem and targeted Tel Aviv amid the mounting violence that followed Israel's killing of the military chief of Hamas. First of all, Hamas doesn't have a military. They have militants. And the only reason they killed him is because of the rockets. And this has, according to the BBC, it has the rockets attack being retaliation for Israel's actions. We don't understand cause and effect.
They've been firing the rockets, and it escalated. People do
right.
not want
then
to.
Then the BBC talks about the number of Palestinians that have been killed, and doesn't mention the only reason they have been killed is that they live directly next to the rocket launchers and above the storehouses of munitions. It is repulsive. It's a story that we need to tell. Josie, I hope that whatever question you did have, that you'll call us again on Monday. Unfortunately, we're out of time today. But this is a serious event that is happening to the world, and most people are being lied to in terms of cause and effect. I'm Yada. This has been Shattering Myths.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of...